This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So since the end of the draft on late Saturday afternoon, a lot of you, me included, have talked about raw athletic score, RAS, Washington's nine-player draft class turned out to be the most athletic based on this calculation this year in the draft. And so we're going to the source. Kent Lee Platy is the creator of Raw Athletic Score, RAS. He does a lot for Pro Football Network. You can follow him on Twitter at MathBomb. He's a Navy veteran. He's a math junkie. He's a football nut. So please indulge me at least for a few minutes here at the beginning, Kent, by just asking some basic questions for not only my benefit, but for the benefit of the audience, because I think some people have followed this in recent years, but being here in Washington, where they perhaps haven't drafted the most overall athletic classes, this was a bit of a revelation for some. So let's start with, what is RAS?
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me on. RAS stands for Relative Athletic Score. It was created in 2013, revised in 2017, and it's been pretty unchanged since then. What we do is we take player athletic testing data from the Combine, Pro Day, the CFL Combine, HBCU Combine, and any official source that we can get, and we compare it to a player's position group all the way back to 1987. Most of the data is actually more modern data. We just didn't have very good data collection methods back then. But it goes back a little ways, and all it does is put everything on a 0 to 10 score. We did 0 to 10 because that's very easy to understand. Everybody can understand 0 is not going to be the good one. And then, of course, if you've seen the cards, everything is color-coded with stoplight colors. So red, yellow, and green, everybody pretty much understands what red, yellow, and green mean when they're used together. The intention was just to create a contextualized testing metric so that we can look at player testing data and actually understand what that means in relation to their position group.
So what specific data is used to generate the 0 through 10 number?
So we look at a player's size, which is only really used for weighting. It's not based on an ideal size. It's bigger is better, because that's used to weight all of the other testing when we get that final grade. So we have a little bit of size weighting there. We measure the 40-yard split and both the 20 and 10 split. We do the bench press, vertical, and broad jump measure explosiveness. And then the agility drills are the shuttle and cone drills. So it's all of the major drills at the NFL Combine and their pro days. They actually do a couple more drills like the 60-yard shuttle occasionally, but those aren't done often enough to really matter from a scoring perspective.
Are certain data points weighted more heavily? Like, is the 40 any different than the way you measure the 20-yard or the 10-yard split? Is it position-based? How does that work?
No, we intentionally designed RAS to be as simple and easily explainable as possible. So there's no individual weighting for position, and everything is weighted exactly the same. That's why we only use height and weight. We don't use arm length and hand size, because if we did, then we'd have four metrics for size, which is just too much to kind of weight for the size. You know, you'd be giving way too much of a benefit to the bigger players and way too much of a drawback for the smaller players. I found that only using two kind of keeps that a little balanced. But yeah, the intention is just to make everything nice and simple and easy to understand. If you want to try to look at it more granularly, you can do that. Once you have all the data, you can start looking at it and be like, well, you know, I prioritize these things a little bit more. It's a lot easier to see that with RAS, because if you do value things like the agility drills more, they're stoplight color coded and they're 0 to 10. So it's much easier to find those guys that meet your benchmarks with something like this.
So Kent, I mean, I love the simplicity of it. So simply put, what does a really good RAS score say about a player?
So we get this every year where people think, oh, these scores don't tell you everything about a player. They're not intended to. The intention is just to give an idea of what a player's general athleticism is. If a player tests really well in every area, then they should be considered a better athlete. But that doesn't mean that a player is a bad athlete if they don't test perfectly in every area. We had a perfect example of this a couple of years ago with DK Metcalf, who tested poorly in his agility, very poorly with his agility drills, but everything else was phenomenal. And you didn't really care about his change of direction ability when you watch him on tape. So do those drills really matter? Because that's what they're measuring, right, is your change of direction ability, your fluidity in space. He didn't need any of that. He's a height, weight, speed guy that wins by being bigger and faster than everybody else. So you'll get guys that don't have the highest scores who still succeed in the area that they do on the football field. And that's where you kind of have to dig into more than just that overall score.
I mean, if the highest score is 10, I'm assuming there have been many 10s. But my question was going to be, who's the player that tested the highest since you've been doing this in 2013?
So it's by pure coincidence that I'm a Lions fan, because it was Calvin Johnson who had the highest score ever. His worst drill was still 97th percentile. I believe it was his 10-yard split. And that was his worst test. So if the worst thing you got going is 97th percentile, that's a hell of an athlete.
So Calvin Johnson turned out to be a hell of a player. Is there somebody that comes to mind that tested off the charts that couldn't play?
Oh, all the time. And this is another thing that people bring up is that, all of these guys scored really well and they didn't do well. The failure rate for a prospect coming into the NFL is insanely high. Less than 10% of players actually get drafted, or about 10% actually get drafted. And we know that fewer than that actually succeed when they get into the NFL. But there's no stranger. The NFL is no stranger to taking guys for traits and then having them not work out. We see it with pass rushers fairly often. Pass rusher is a position where athleticism generally is a really good indicator. But you'll get guys like Vernon Golston and Deion Jordan, guys that were basically just athletes, that don't work out. It's only meant to be part of the equation, not the entire equation.
So what have you learned over the, 10 or 11 years that you've done this? Like, how significant should an NFL team take the results of this? I mean, how often is it used? How important is it for them?
So NFL teams all have their own analytics departments. They have access to more data than we'll ever be able to get. They don't have to fight for it like I have to. They have a lot of access to a lot of resources, but RAS provides a pretty useful analog to what a lot of NFL teams are using. And you'll see this a lot with rebuilding teams that are just getting started. We saw it with the Bears over the last couple of years. The Colts have been doing it for a little while as they've kind of struggled through rebuilding. But you also see it in teams like the Eagles, who have traditionally always drafted the best athletes that they can find for a very long time, almost a full decade. The Eagles had the most athletic offensive line in the NFL, and it's probably no coincidence that their offensive line was also one of the best in the NFL over that period of time. You tend to find that the best players are the best athletes, So when you're trying to draft the position, you don't just look for the best athletes, but you use that as one indicator as you're looking at a player. If you have a player that tests poorly, you've really got to weigh whether or not you think that player can succeed. Because you've got plenty of examples of players with lower athletic testing who still do well, but they're not very common, and teams tend to value that in the draft differently. We didn't have any players in the draft this year taken in the first round that had a RAS below 5, and only one where the RAS was below 8, which was Darius Robinson. We only had, I think, two players in the second round and two players in the third round that had below 5. Teams don't look at those athletic testing numbers and think, oh, well, I don't care because the tape's good. They value that stuff when they're trying to come up with their players. And I think a lot of teams use it as a sort of tiebreaker when they're looking at multiple players and saying, yeah, but this guy also didn't test very well. Because it's a better indicator of who's likely to fail than who's likely to succeed.
Interesting. If I'm being repetitive here, just tell me, because I know you answered something resembling what I'm going to ask earlier, but is there a position where this is more effective in evaluating a player in the draft?
Absolutely. I've mentioned pass rusher, offensive tackle, and offensive guard seem to correlate very, very tightly to it. One of the biggest ones, though, is tight end. Tight ends rarely succeed if they're not the very best athletes. For tight ends that have had a 750-yard receiving, just one 750-yard receiving season, there's only been one in the last 25 years who had a RAS below 5, and that was Jordan Reed, who was injured when he tested. And, of course, injuries were a big part of his career. But he's the only one. We don't have any other examples of a lower testing athlete succeeding at tight end. And indeed, most of the best tight ends, they're not just above that 80th percentile, that 8.0 or higher for RAS, but they're generally above that 9 or higher.
Really?
Yeah, it generally.
Who's the highest testing tight end during your era of
doing this?
It's
been broken twice in the last couple of years. We had it broken by Jelani Woods that the Colts drafted a couple of years back. And then last year by Zach Kuntz, who was a seventh-round pick from the Jets. But you look at guys like Jimmy Graham, Rob Gronkowski, Kelsey, Kittle, all of those guys are just phenomenal athletes compared to their position group.
We are talking to Kent Lee Platy. He's the creator of RAS, Relative Athletic Score. This is actually really interesting. So, pass rusher, the both offensive line positions, tight end, this is a real strong indicator of. Is there a position where this rarely indicates anything?
Mathematically, the answer to that is no, because they all show some correlation. Even quarterback shows some correlation from a mathematical standpoint. But there's a little bit more to it than just looking like there's a trend. For quarterback example, for example, the percentage of successful quarterbacks for RAS is fairly high. It's like 60-something percent compared to the guys that are below. But that's also almost exactly the same percentage of players on a roster at that position. So it doesn't really show us that it correlates to success more. It shows you that it you're more likely to get on a roster, right? Center has been one of those very elusive positions where we've got a lot of examples of centers who don't have very good athletic testing metrics, and they still find a ton of success in the NFL. So even though mathematically that correlation is there, I always bring it up because there's a lot of guys that have found success who didn't test well. Both Pouncey brothers, there's a couple other ones, but a lot of centers we've had where that happened. Nose tackle is one that I bring up all the time because nose tackles just don't test well. But nose tackle is not separated from defensive tackle when we talk about position groupings for the draft. So you get these guys like Tavondre Sweat, who was drafted this year, who's this big hulking guy who's not meant to move a lot, right? For his size, he's a good athlete, but he's also being compared to like the Aaron Donalds of the world. And athletically, he's just never going to measure up to that.
Interesting. Like, by the way, I don't know if the same level of testing is done in, say, basketball prior to the draft. In fact, I can't even think of what the testing is, you know, for a combine. But I basketball players would be really interesting because I'm curious as to just, and we'll get to Washington here in their draft specifically here in a moment, but in terms of the drills that you look at, the numbers that you use to create the relative athletic score, what kind of athlete would perform the best overall? Like in the conversation of who are the best athletes, what sport do they play?
See, that one's tough because the translatable skills are different, right? You don't need to be as quick and agile in basketball as you do, say, playing nickel corner or a slot receiver in the NFL. So those individual traits are a little bit different. But I think if you look pound for pound, basketball's got to be up there, right? You got some of the biggest athletes in the world, the guys with these huge, massive wingspans that are 7 feet tall. And their explosiveness drills are generally very good. The NBA does test for explosiveness and speed. And the best guys, from what I've heard, I haven't done all the research myself, but I've heard that there's a general correlation there as well. But those guys are just crazy athletes for their size. Now, you look at that at the NFL, though, we've got offensive tackles who are just insane-level athletes for their size. Penei Sewell came out a couple of years ago, and I talked about the difference between a 300-pound offensive tackle and a 330-pound offensive tackle. And you might have some very similar testing there, but that's 30 pounds of weight that you've got to move around at essentially the same speed as some of these other guys. And it's just wild how athletic some of those big guys are.
Where did Trent Williams, I mean, he came out before you started the testing in 2010, but how is he, from your standpoint, one of the, like, who's the most athletic offensive lineman in the league?
So Trent Williams actually did test. Our data goes all the way back to 1987. I started
doing
this
back to
2013.
Right. Yeah, you started in 2013. My fault. Yeah, so go ahead.
No worries. I did a ton of historical data collection, and Trent Williams had a 9.64 out of 10. Very athletic player. The thing on him is just that he wasn't very tall. And we know that offensive linemen don't block with their heads, so that's not too much of a concern. But when we start looking at, you know, the actual just regular offensive linemen, you get guys like your Kelsey and Sam Cosmi actually had the 10 at guard until just recently. I think that got taken this year by Graham Barton. You know, some of these guys just test so ridiculously high, and it's usually the guys you expect. I know Taylor Lewan held that 10 spot for a while at offensive tackle. We had Brandon Brooks held the guard spot for a while. Him and Evan Mathis kind of went back and forth. Their scores were so similar, they would switch depending on the year. But offensive linemen who test extremely well tend to do very well in the NFL.
Interesting. By the way, on the center conversation, is it because it's a very cerebral position that perhaps that, you know, that's as significant as the athleticism?
That's always been my thinking. Like, I don't have a true answer for it, but my thinking has always been exactly that. Just that center requires so much more thinking and processing than a lot of other positions do, that a guy with lower athletic testing but really good with that cerebral stuff can find a lot more success. But we don't really have any way to measure that kind of stuff reliably.
Who was the number one RAS player in this year's draft?
That would be Graham Barton. He moved to center. They announced him as a center. So he ended up taking that 10 overall spot from Creed Humphrey, who had gotten it a couple of years ago.
All right. So let's talk about Washington's class. First of all, how has Washington done in recent years as it relates to, you know, relative athletic score?
They've done pretty well. You start looking at teams like the Commanders, and you look at like this year and what they're kind of dealing with. They're drafting a new quarterback. So them leading is not very surprising, because teams that are trying to build things back up or trying to refill their roster, they tend to do where they just grab as many athletes as they can. So they averaged 9.43 out of 10 this year, which is crazy high. But they averaged 8.96 out of 10 last year. So still pretty high, 8.45 in 2021. And then in 2022, it only averaged 7.7, which is still a high number. It just wasn't close to the highest as it was this year.
So you would say to people who would say they've never looked at, you know, this kind of drafting as false, they've actually drafted high RAS classes before.
Yeah, they have done it before. I think it's where they start to value things and how they start to value things that might be changing. because, you know, guys like Terry McLaurin is a really good player, but he didn't have as high of an athletic score as some of the other guys they've taken recently. They took Jaden Daniels, who might have been the most athletic quarterback in this class had he tested. Johnny Newton was probably going to be pretty close to the most athletic defensive tackle in this class. Brandon Coleman, I think he might have ended up being the most athletic guard in the class because we moved Barton to center. Ben Sinnott, one of the highest tight ends in the class. So they went for the top athletes at almost every pick.
Well, that's what I was going to have you do next. But again, their 9.43 out of 10 was number one in this year's draft in the league.
Yes, it was. Yep. And that's pretty high just overall compared to any other year.
So what you mentioned Daniels up there. Was he number one this year?
He didn't end up testing, so we didn't get any numbers on him. I would have bet. It's similar to Lamar Jackson. I'm not comparing them as players, but it's a similar concept where he didn't test, but we know he would have done well, right? Nothing on his tape says that there was any real issues with his athletic profile.
Johnny Newton was number one among defensive tackles. You said that.
He would have been. He also didn't test. He's dealing with that foot injury. But yeah. I'm pretty confident had he tested, he would have been at least near the top. I mean, his size hurt him a little bit, but I don't think that would have been too much of a concern at all. He would have tested really well.
What about Sanderstill from Michigan?
Sanderstill is the lowest testing player that Washington took, which is hilarious because it's an 8.45 out of 10. And he didn't test below average in any of the actual testing metrics. The only areas that really hurt him was size. I mean, I would expect that he's probably going to play nickel at least to start his career, so the size isn't even really a concern. But his worst test, I think, was his three cone, which was still under 7 seconds, so it's still a good three cone. And then his bench was only 14, which is still above average. That's almost 63rd percentile for a cornerback. So he tested very, very well. It's just that his size brought his score down.
So on Sinnott, just tell me again, he was very high among tight ends?
Yeah, he had a 9.73, which was one of the highest in the class. Not the highest. Theo Coleman, right? Had the 9.97 this year, which was the highest among tight ends. But 9.7 is still very, very high. Like that is a very high score, and that's what you want. You want those really athletic guys. It ended up third in the class. Tip Ryman out of Illinois had a really good score at 9.92, but he's also really big, so his size actually worked in his favor for his scoring.
All right, so Brandon Coleman was one of those picks here, Kent. There's a need for offensive line, and, you know, they took Newton, they took Sanderstill, they took Sinnott in the second round, and they've not been very good as an offensive line recently. They take Brandon Coleman in the third round out of TCU. You said he tested very high. Do you see his testing translate more to guard or tackle?
I would generally put it at guard. He didn't have that magic number that you want for offensive linemen, and which is a 4.5 or below, or below 4.5 in the shuttle. But he had a 4.62, which is still a very, very good shuttle time. Those under 4.5 shuttle times are very rare for offensive linemen, but he's pretty close to it. His explosive drills, though, were 98th and 97th percentile, respectively. Extremely good explosion drills. And then, of course, his time drills were all very good. He ran the 40 under 5 seconds, and he had a 1.73 10-yard split. All of those are extremely good numbers. There just isn't a flaw with his athletic profile. And even the stuff that isn't scored by Raz, hand size and arm length, very big hands at almost 11 inches and very long arms at over 34.5 inches.
Which would kind of indicate that there's a good chance he could play tackle with the longer arms.
If they think that there's a possibility of it, I'm always a big fan of trying guys at tackle and then moving them inside as you go.
What did you think of Coleman? Did you do mock drafts, right? Are they strictly Raz driven, or is it just one factor in you putting together a mock draft?
It's one factor. I know that I factor in athleticism more than most people do, but it's not like as much of a thing as people would suspect because I created the metric. I still watch a lot of players playing football. I still watch a lot of tape and evaluate players from that end. Coleman is a good player. I think that guard is probably where he's going to end up in the NFL. I think that's his best landing spot overall. I think that he can play tackle if he needs to, but it's one of those, like, you want to use a guy to their strength. You know, you want to use them in a way that is going to take the best use of their abilities. And I think that he works a lot better inside. That length is really good, even at tackle. That's good arm length, and he uses his explosiveness and his agility well. But I just think that he does so much better with it inside, and he's able to really prevent that interior rush.
What about the other four players real quickly? McCaffrey went in the third, and then Jordan McGee, who looked like an athlete on the field at Temple, Hampton, and John Baptiste. What about the scores on those four?
So Maggie had a 9.6 coming out of Temple. Again, all of his tests were good. He's just a little bit undersized, which isn't right. A very big deal. So that isn't a concern from a scoring standpoint. Very fast, very explosive, very quick. All of those are traits that you want. You generally want your linebackers to be more explosive than anything else, and he's got all of that. He had a 91st percentile broad and an 80th percentile vert. Very good explosion drills. But it's his agility drills that I think really popped when teams were looking at him. And that does show up on tape. He's very good at changing his direction and adjusting when he sees the ball move. It does take him a little bit sometimes. I think there's some speed of the game stuff that's going to come into play, especially early on in his career. But if he picks things up quickly, that guy has all the athletic traits you want to succeed for a linebacker. McCaffrey, he's wins with his agility, and that's where he tested the best. So he tested well. He had a 9.44 out of 10 for his overall RAS. He didn't have any below average tests. But it's really the only thing I really pay attention to him is those agility drills, which were 96th and 95th percentile. Very, very, very good. And that's where he wins on the football field. He's a quick and agile player. So the other stuff is just icing on the cake. You know, he's a good athlete when it comes to explosiveness. He has good speed, but he has great agility. And that's where you want him to win on the field.
I don't know if you remember or not, but how did Daron Payne and John Allen test athletically?
So I know John Allen tested good as a defensive tackle. I think when he came out, he was listed as an end, though, which kind of, you know, sullied that a little bit from a scoring perspective because it kind of made him look like a worse athlete than he was. But John Allen tested really good as a defensive tackle. I actually used him as a comparison for Darius Robinson, who came out this year for like that type of success where it's not quite elite testing as a defensive tackle, but really good. He had a 7.74 at defensive tackle. I think it was like 3 or something as an end, which is what he was listed at originally. And then Daron Payne was kind of in the same boat where he didn't have all the greatest testing as an end where he was listed at for some, but as an interior lineman, he tested very well. He had an 8.56 out of 10. He ran a very good 40-yard dash and had very good splits. All of his other numbers were just kind of okay, but from an overall athletic perspective, it looked really good.
All right. This has been really interesting, and I know people who are listening are enjoying this. So Jamin Davis, they didn't pick up his fifth-year option. He has shown, you know, at times to be very athletic, very fast, quick twitch on the field. Did he test high coming out athletically?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was a big testing guy, and that was the big draw for a player like him was that he had all this athleticism. My Lions actually took a guy a few years earlier in Jared Davis, who was a very similar kind of evaluation where it was all about the athleticism and what you could project to do with him. You can move him all over as a linebacker. You can rush the passer with him if you need to because he's got that explosiveness and speed. It's that extra element that you can use. There's a lot of north of the neckline stuff that you need to play that kind of a position sure. as a linebacker. And I think with Jared Davis for the Lions, that was the biggest issue was just that recognition never developed. And that might just be what we see occasionally with Jamin Davis is that some of that stuff just isn't there. It hasn't developed as much as you want to from a cerebral perspective. And you end up overcorrecting for things. And overcorrecting when you're that good of an athlete can actually cause bigger problems because you're further out of place.
Right.
If you do decide to take the wrong hole, you are now all the way out of the play, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, right. If you're not sharp above the neck, it's better to be less athletic, actually. So, final one, Emmanuel Forbes, who really struggled as a rookie. How did Emmanuel Forbes look a year ago?
Yeah, and it's going to look exactly like you expect it to look. He had all of the athletic traits that you want from a player, except one thing, and that's going to be the concern until it isn't, which is just how small he is from a physical perspective, his actual weight and frame. Yep. He tested very well for speed. He ran a 4.35, which is 97th percentile. His explosion drills were really good. He's tall for a cornerback at almost 6'1", but he was 166 pounds, which is only, I think, it's below second percentile, right? It's below 0.19 on RAS, so that's 1.9th percentile at cornerback. That's a limiting factor. That's something that you have to work with. You got to be physical at cornerback, and if you're that small, it's going to work against you. Guys tend to manhandle smaller guys.
All right, I lied. One more, because you mentioned weight and frame, and that's been a big discussion around here as it relates to the player they took at number two overall, Jaden Daniels. What do you make of his frame?
I don't really have too much of a concern with it at quarterback. I think it's one of those things that used to be a lot bigger of a deal than it is now. And with him, I don't really see why it's that much of a concern. I think the bigger concern for people from an evaluation standpoint was just that he kind of didn't. I think he was one of the guys that didn't do it at the combine, right? He only weighed in once he got to his pro day. I think it was just that kind of caginess about it. But for me, that only really matters if you test, and you test differently at a different weight, and he didn't test. So there isn't really anything to use by that. He came in at 6'3¼", 210 pounds. That's not great from a quarterback perspective as far as your frame and your size in terms of weight. But it's also not terrible. We've got plenty of guys that have found success in the NFL that are under 220, and it hasn't really been a problem. And we're also seeing more of that as the post Russell Wilson era of just kind of understanding that height isn't that big of a limiting factor anymore. We're starting to see some of those smaller guys come out. So I don't think it's as much of a concern as it was being made out to be.
All right. Can you rip off the quadratic formula right now for me?
I can't. It's too long and your audience would fall asleep.
You are great. This was really, really fun to talk to you. I'm glad I reached out. Kent Lee Platty at MathBomb on X on Twitter, explaining everything about what he created, the relative athletic score, Washington with the most RAS class this year in the draft. Thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me on. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Kent Lee Platty, everybody. Interesting stuff. We'll do some Denton news next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Temp check. What kind of summer are we having this year? A family road trip summer? A beach bum summer? Or a wake me when the sun sets summer? With Instacart, choose your own adventure and skip the shopping side quests. Where available, you can get ice cream delivered to your hotel, sunscreen to the pool, or cold brew to your bed. Well, door, in as fast as 30 minutes. Wherever you find yourself this summer, you can get the goods. Download Instacart for free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum $10 per order. Excludes restaurants. Additional terms and fees apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hitting the news you might have missed, it's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, we're starting with the Nats.
Let's start with a little bit of those Nationals. Four in a row, they sweep the Marlins. They have another big performance offensively. For those that are counting, that's 30 runs in the last three games for the Nationals. Bats are scorching right now. They're headed to Texas today, but they're on a roll. They're 500.
500 through 28 games of the season. And, yeah, I mean, they've took four against the worst team in baseball in Miami. But, you know, Miami has owned them in recent years. So it's a great start. And actually, you know, now that they're back at 500, I think they're tied for third in the division with the Mets. The top of this division is just so loaded with the Braves and the Phillies in particular. But great start. And C.J. Abrams, you know, awesome again. This guy right now, I think people would say that he is having an all-star start to the season at this point. Had another home run, two-run shot last night on the season, hitting .297. He's got seven home runs through 28 games, 17 RBIs. Slugging percentage is .634, which would be 200 points higher than anything he's ever done career-wise. An OPS of 1.011. I mean, right now, C.J. Abrams is having an all-star start to the season, and the Nats are clearly much improved from the where they were last year. You could look at it and say, well, they beat the Marlins four in a row. The Marlins are 6-24, but you know, they took 2 of 3 from the Dodgers a week and a half ago. They took 2 of 3 from the Astros. So we'll see. They get the Rangers coming up starting tonight, right? The first game in Dallas is tonight?
Yeah, tonight at 8 on 106.7.
Yeah, the Rangers are somewhere around 500 in terms of their start to the season. So good for them. I mean, really impressive start to the season.
So you mentioned you opened the show with the NBA with the Lakers and the Nuggets. What about Boston taking a 3-1 lead over Miami? They lose Kristaps in the process. Calf injury, he misses just about all the second half.
Are they saying anything? Because it looked worse than just calf.
So the official prognosis now is calf, but they fear it's an Achilles.
Yeah.
And it feels like the Achilles has ruined this entire NBA postseason. It's the same similar thing that took out Giannis and now Dame Lillard and now potentially Kristaps Porzingis. I mean, it's not been a good postseason for the calf Achilles area.
What is it with calf injuries and Achilles injuries in particular? It just seems like to me over the last several years, seen so much more of it in sports. I'm sure there's an explanation for it. I think people in general life who are active, you know, maybe play sports, play basketball, play various sports. I mean, I've been, you know, around people that have torn Achilles. You actually can hear it on a basketball court because it pops. I think in the last 5 to 10 years, you know, 5 years in particular, it just seems like there's so many more Achilles injuries and maybe calf, but, you know, torn Achilles for sure. I mean, Porzingis, that's been his biggest issue, obviously, throughout his career. You know who was just awesome last night? And I watched some of this game, too. Was Derek White. I mean,
yeah.
This guy, you know, for a couple of years now, but he had 38 last night and had 8 threes in the game. I think a lot of people think Boston is not going to get tested at all in the East. It's probably true. I also think a lot of people think Boston wins the NBA title. I would certainly not.
I would not bet that.
I would not count on that. I think Denver can beat Boston in a best of seven, and we just haven't seen what Minnesota and OKC and Dallas can't beat Boston in a best of seven, but Dallas can't beat Denver. You know, the Clippers completely healthy, which they're not, could beat anybody in a best of seven, but they're not healthy. So anyway, lots of injuries for sure. The Achilles thing, I'm sure somebody's got an explanation on that. Just tweet me at Kevin Sheehan DC. Go ahead. What else?
So this was a story that I saw, and I was so excited to put on my news because I thought you were going to have some great takes on this.
Really?
Dave & Buster's is going to allow customers to now bet on arcade games. They're partnering with a company called Lucra Sports that allows participants to wager on recreation sports. Because it's recreation, you can kind of ditch some of like the gambling laws, which, I mean, take that for whatever it is. So you can now wager on things like skee ball,
yeah, it's game of chance, not skill. That's the difference.
Right.
But it, in the states where it's legal, it wouldn't matter anyway, I would think. But I don't understand. So skee-ball. Let's just take skee-ball as an example. What are you doing? Are you wagering on a score to beat?
A score to beat. You can face your friends. So if you each want a matchup, I'm doing this the best justice I can. This is a terrible idea, and you're a sucker if you do this. Because there's nothing that's stopping you and I from going to Dave and Buster's right now and putting our own wager, $5, on who wins this hot shot basketball game, who can make the more. So there's nothing stopping us from doing that right now. Literally all this does is invest a middleman into the actual wager, which then gives them money. It's the stupidest thing.
I know I've kind of alluded to this in the past, and trust me, I understand there's a little bit of biting the hand that feeds. Gambling ain't for everybody, okay? It is not for everybody. And I have seen many a horror story, tragedy, when it comes to this. It's been my biggest beef over the last 5 years, where you've seen a lot of people, and I'm, you know, the only name I'll mention is just Ted. Ted got very excited, and Ted was obviously very naive when it came to this stuff, or disingenuous, one or the other, but I think he was naivete more than anything else. But there are major downsides, kids, to gambling, okay? It can be a life ruiner. It is addictive. This is the ultimate in moderation. Everything's fine in moderation. The issue is not everybody can moderate when it comes to things like this. And if you're in Dave and Buster's, look, I've been in places like that with friends of mine, and we, of course, are wagering on things like skee ball. It's never been, I guarantee you, I've been on the Rehoboth Boardwalk at Funland playing skee ball for money at some point with, you know, other fathers as we took the kids to Funland. But it's not for everybody. As my good friend Dave Preston says all the time, Vegas, not for everybody. Gambling is not for everybody. Be careful, kids. Terrible idea. Terrible idea, especially when you're betting against machines. Don't ever do that. Okay? Don't ever go and bet against potentially rigged machines. You know, one of the when online, you know, casinos became a big deal. Poker's different. You're playing against people. But when I know people that got really hooked on online blackjack, online craps, online baccarat, etc., don't do that. Seriously. I mean, all of these places are regulated now in a much better way, and they're fair. But, you know, in the early days of Wild Wild West online casinos, you were an idiot if you got sucked into online blackjack. No offense. What else do you have?
Dave
and Buster's.
When I injected this story, I didn't think you would give love to Funland in Rehoboth. Great spot. Did you ever do that, like, zero gravity situation they got there? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I'm not big into getting on a lot of the ride things, especially the things that go round and round.
That nearly killed me once.
Yeah, I don't do well with round and round things. I get off a little nauseous. But the games and the arcade stuff, yeah, I mean, when we would take the kids there.
The obstacle course was one of my favorite things when I was old enough to get on that.
What was?
The obstacle course.
I don't really remember the obstacle course.
Yeah, we used to call it the Ronald McDonald because there was a big clown face. Why they put a clown face on something for children, I don't really know. But we would do all... Oh, it was great. Climb through ropes and all this stuff. It was awesome.
Hmm. I mean, this Lucra's who's managing arcade-style gambling, I'm assuming they're taking a cut of these things.
I imagine.
That's the kind of... the kind of business that actually makes more sense. There's probably less risk. But anyway, go ahead. What else do you have?
All right, final thing here. Great day for the Kelseys yesterday. Travis gets a 2-year, $34.25 million extension. That makes him the highest paid tight end ever. And it was reported by Andrew Marchand that Jason Kelce is officially going to join ESPN's Monday Night Countdown, seemingly moving Robert Griffin to do other things at ESPN, join Ryan Clark, Marcus Spears, then your guy, Scott Van Pelt.
Yeah, I think Scott's really happy about Jason Kelce joining. That said, I think, look, nobody ever really knows how a guy will be. He was the hottest, you know, free agent on the sports television landscape this go round, and I think Jason Kelce, you know, Scott loves Ryan, loves Marcus Spears, and so Kelce being a part of this will probably round it out in a really good way. Should be a good show. Look, I mean, I'm not a big pregame show watcher. I watch his on Monday night when I can, but you know, it's much more pregame shows are, you know, fun to a certain degree. When you have Monday Night Football and there's one game and you're coming off the previous day, you know, 12, 13, 14 games, whatever it is, depending on if they're bye weeks or not, it's a football show. You know, it's a football show. It's not a, you know, create a viral, you know, meme moment show. That'll be, I have no idea if Kelce will be any good. He seems good. You know, I've seen some of the podcast clips with his brother.
He did stuff with Amazon on a bye week, Thursday Night Football. He's going to be awesome. I don't know how Amazon fumbled him, by the way. That should have been a shoe-in, but ESPN gets a good one.
All right. Good for him. How much is he going to get paid doing that?
That has not been announced yet. I'm going to guess it's a good amount.
Right. All right. What else do you have? Anything else?
That's all I got for you.
I wanted to play that Belichick cut that you found on Jaden Daniels. We'll do that when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Left 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
So Denton mentioned this to me before the show. It was Bill Belichick on Pat McAfee's draft show, I guess, breaking down Jaden Daniels. Here's what Belichick said about Washington's new quarterback.
Is this the smart play, the right decision, and how do you think they got here?
Well, again, I think this is a little similar to the Caleb Williams conversation. I think that that Jaden has a good opportunity to be an outstanding player, and he showed that this year. He won the Heisman Trophy, and he had a lot of great plays. I think for him, a lot of his throws come outside the numbers. He's very fast. He's an excellent runner and scrambler. I think he's going to have to learn to stay in the pocket and read coverages and throw the ball, but he's capable of doing that.
Let's look at some tape to see what the Washington Commanders are getting for Jaden Daniels and what it could look like in the future. Let's go to Bill Belichick's big breakdown with Jaden Daniels, quarterback out of LSU. 6'4", big, 210.
Whoa.
Great leader. His teammates really play for him here. He's got a really good touch. Again, a lot of these throws are typical. They're going to come outside the numbers, and it seems like that's where he's most comfortable throwing the ball. You know, this is an example down here of kind of the touch. This is neighbors at the bottom. He's got single coverage, and Jaden just doesn't put the ball out there high enough, and, you know, neighbors doesn't really have a shot at it. So his touch and, I would say, you know, inside the numbers, he has great receivers. Neighbors, Taylor, who's going to be a high pick next year, Thomas. He's got some good guys to throw to, and this is, again, another really good throw on the perimeter. This kid's got a good arm. I worked him out last year. He was at the LSU Pro Day a year ago working out those receivers, and this kid can make all the throws. You can see he's really fast here. He's sometimes, I think, a little too quick to pull the ball down, but when he does pull the ball down, he usually runs, and he's going to have to learn to get his eyes downfield. You know, these are the ones you got to hit here. He's got an open receiver. He's got plenty of time in the pocket. And again, these are the mechanics that we talked about
earlier
in the show.
He'll get better at that.
Yeah, we got to make those. But really, really accurate outside the numbers. Got, a, like I said, a really good arm. Gives the receiver a chance to, you know, run with some extra yards for the ball here with a good throw, good accurate throw. We don't want to do this.
Forget about this.
Jaden, forget about this.
This is not what we're going to sign up for as a commander?
No, we don't want to do this. We don't want to run up here and try to hurtle into the –
oh,
jeez.
Right into Jordan right Davis.
Every team may have let you know about that.
Yeah.
Hey, let's not
do that. But you give him credit for being a tough guy and not
– No doubt. Biden? He is a tough kid. Yeah, he's a tough kid. This is another, you know, dangerous throw here. I don't think this is really, you know, necessary. Comes on the backside. Lucky he didn't get it picked off by the corner. So, again, a kid that really has a lot of talent here. If you design the running plays for him, I mean, this guy can kill you.
Damn.
I think that if I were coaching against him, I would have some kind of a spy on him and make sure that he didn't beat us running and didn't beat us, you know, with throws outside of numbers. And then I think he'll eventually get better and be able to attack the middle of the field. But that's something he's going to have to work on.
Full sellout here from Jared Verse, who we know is a stud.
Yep. Yeah, Verse he almost caught him there. I mean, that was we'll talk about Verse later, I'm sure. You know, again, good timing play. He can get it out on time. You know, 6'4", you know, you like this guy who has this kind of vision. This play, Foxy, if you hit that back for a second.
That's a play called Foxy.
Attaboy. Attaboy.
It might be Bill. You know, down here at the bottom, Florida State's 3-on-2 on this empty formation, and Florida State's 3-on-3 on top against the bunch there. So this read really should be at the top of the screen where the 3-on-3 is.
Yep.
And Neighbors is going to come open on this, but, you know, Jaden's working where he's outnumbered down here and, you know, misses an open receiver there.
Two things. One, you know, there was a lot of constructive criticism there of Jaden Daniels, which is very – I'd much rather hear Bill Belichick on Jaden Daniels, just like hearing Nick Saban talk about Sandersville being the best pound-for-pound player in the draft was good to hear. The second thing is Belichick's going to be so good at this. I don't know where – do we know where he's going to land next year? Is he going to be doing just McAfee stuff every week, or is he going to be on a call of a game, or is he going to be on a set?
So he's definitely doing something with Omaha Productions, which goes outside McAfee with Peyton Manning's production company. I would imagine after this weekend – ESPN's going to get him doing something else. Like, if you could, right at the end of that, when he started actually, like, having control of the video, that's when he was at his best. I think this dude could do great film breakdowns for ESPN.
I think especially given his knowledge of today's NFL and all of the players and all of the teams and all of the coaches, you know, doing a draft is... you know, a draft that he wasn't going to be involved in is different than doing games next year in which he is familiar with every participant in it. I think it's going to be great to watch Belichick next year. Saban, too. All right, when we come back, John Beck is part of one of those quarterback academies. We had John on the show 6 months ago or so. He's been training Jaden Daniels. You'll hear what he thinks about Jaden Daniels in a Washington uniform next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.